welcome to Future Focused, Sophisticated Estate Planning with Wiggin and Dana, the show where CPAs, insurance professionals, investment brokers, trust companies, CFPs, and more can firm up on their understanding of estate planning strategies so they can better guide their clients to make wise decisions with their legacy. Future Focus is hosted by Aaron Nichols and Michael Clear, partners of the Private Client Services Department at Wiggin and Dana. Subscribe to Future Focused, Sophisticated Estate Planning on your favorite podcast platform and share episodes with your clients. And now, here are your hosts, Aaron and Michael.
Welcome to Future Focus. This is your host, Michael Clear, and I'm here today with Tom Henske. I said it correctly.
You got it.
I got it, which is good. Who is the owner of Influent Insurance Advisor. We're going to talk a little bit about that company and then also a little bit about a company that he has created called Total Sense, which will focus, well, we'll get there in a minute. So give me a little bit about you.
That was the ultimate tease on them. Total Sense, we'll tell you later. I basically started in the industry in 1995. So I'm 29-ish years in as a financial advisor. And basically, we built our practice based on disability insurance, which is really unique. There was a company then called Lehman Brothers that you may have heard of. And Lehman Brothers hired us to come in and work with the senior executives on implementing their supplemental disability insurance. And we used that as a tool to then get them as financial planning clients. So we were in with that. They didn't own Neuberger Berman at the time. They said, great, what else do you do? We can help you with this, that, and the other thing. And that's how we built our business. It got so big that people started to offer us as a benefit through part of their group benefits plan, not just Lehman Brothers, other firms. And so our problem as we were building the company was more of we have too many clients and not enough advisors, as opposed to having not enough clients and too many advisors. You can imagine that. So it's interesting. I came up in the business with a completely different mindset. That it was, how do we create abundance for too many clients so that either A, we're never going to be lacking revenue coming in, or B, we can just be super choosy about the people that we want to work with. And the people who are listening to this podcast are probably saying like, gosh, if someone had just told me at 25, if I work with a person like this, that, or the other, it's going to drive me nuts 30 years down the line. No one really gives you that class in college to look out for the people that you're going to be doing business with. So it wound up being great and we built it and then sold that about 4-ish years ago and now just do personal insurance advising.
So we work with a lot of business owners and so you've helped grow a successful business. You led that business to an exit for yourself. We can talk a little bit about the exit if you want. And then also what's next? It's often when we talk about business owners and planning and that transition is what is the next? And I think that's where we'll get the total sense on what that next piece is.
Yeah, it's interesting when you think about it. I always loved the life insurance component of the business. I don't know why, I just did.
No judging.
You're right, there's no judging. Well, it's funny you say that because I think that's why I wanted to call myself a wealth manager. Here in my mind, I'm like, I went to University of Virginia. That's a pretty prestigious university. I can't tell people I'm in the life insurance business. And I think it was pretty funny because I was just pretending to be a financial advisor for 20 some odd years. And now I'm just doing what I actually wanted to do to begin with, to just work with high net worth individuals and structuring their life insurance portfolio. What that also did is when there was that opportunity to exit, I had that little thought in my mind on, wow, we're really doing a terrible job of teaching kids about money. And it was mostly because I deal with high net worth people and my clients always say these two things. My kid thinks that money grows on trees or my kid doesn't understand the value of a dollar. And so I kept hearing the same thing over and over and over. And I said, okay, now I'm perpetuating it because what I do for a living is make sure that they're passing the maximum amount down of their estate that they can. And that's why life insurance gets introduced in these conversations. But again, I'm preparing the money for the kids, but I'm not preparing the kids for the money. So I said to myself, that would really be cool if I could be the person who's preparing the money for the kids, but then also be the person that's preparing the kids for the money.
And that's where Total Sense comes in.
And that's where Total Sense came in. So it seems like there are these two disparate parts. but they're actually very aligned. And it's interesting because from meeting new clients, I would never, ever get asked to speak anywhere on life insurance matters. Can you imagine at a private school?
I'm not signing up for that. I'm not attending that event.
No one's coming to that one. But I tell you, everyone will come to the, here's how not to mess up your kids. Here's how to teach them about money and make sure they have good habits. And so what happens is I have this expertise in that area, and we could talk about why I feel like I have a lot of experience in that. But when you go and you talk about that, people are listening and they say, oh, wow, I like what this guy's saying. What else does he do? Oh, I need to look at my insurance anyway. And so it feeds that side of the business well.
They complement each other on the business. So we're sitting here and you were sitting in COVID. COVID was post-sale?
Let's see. It was 2015 that we sold, but we had a very long earnout period. So yes, we were right in the middle of COVID towards the tail end of our earnout period.
And so at some point in there, you decided to write a book.
Here's what happened. So you know this. I work with our local library on this project. It's a little pet project, and they have some unbelievable resources at the Westport Library. So we were going to start a podcast right before COVID and the pandemic hit. So obviously everything got put on the sideline. I reached out to the person who's the director of the library and said, hey, is anyone using that podcast equipment? And he laughed. He said, of course they're not. And I said, can I borrow it? He said, yeah, you can borrow it until we reopen the library. I thought that would be a couple of weeks, and it wound up being—
In 2 weeks. I'll bring it back
in 2 weeks. Yeah, it would be back in 2 weeks. So I had that, and I set up a little studio in my house, and I started to create this podcast. Well, a friend of mine said, you should write a book. I go, gosh, I don't have time to write a book. He goes, buddy, you already wrote 40 podcast episodes. That's a book. So I basically just slimmed down the 40 episodes and came up with 12 chapters that I thought were the 12 things that you should make sure you teach your kids before they go to college or before they graduate college. And that was the whole genesis of the book.
Or whenever they pick up the book.
It's actually a book for parents, not for the kids. I know better because kids now don't read. So they listen to things, but they don't read.
Yeah, but it's pretty neat. The setup is such that I'll get it wrong, but let me try. So you read a chapter of the book. You send the kids a video?
Actually, you're going to laugh. Not a video, but a TikTok.
I would call it a video, even though it's on TikTok.
Yeah. And now that I said the word TikTok, all your listeners shut this off because they're like, I can't believe we have a guy on who likes TikTok. But yes, it's like a sneaky little way to trip the algorithms for financial TikToks. So they send them ours and it sets the stage for talking about something.
Absolutely. So chapter at a time. So it's not a book that you sit down and read the entire book. No one would want to do that anyway.
No, and I'm a terrible writer. For that. Yeah. That's what they want to read. Cover to cover, the insurance guy talking about money. No. So it's geared to do one chapter per month. And each chapter is only 7 to 8 pages. So this is—
It's manageable.
It's manageable.
And designed for guiding the parent and then connecting the parent with the kid through the TikTok, which then should lead to further conversations.
And I'm hoping that conversation happens in one of two places because people always tell me they don't have time. And I called it the Bermuda Triangle of parent excuses, which is not enough knowledge, not enough time, or the school should be doing it anyway. So the not enough time one really rubs me the wrong way because yes, you do have time. It's called dinner and car rides.
Car rides are often the best place to get best information.
They're trapped. So you've got them. And so what I do is I teach parents to not give a lecture, to use Socratic method, just ask a question and then let them talk. And then you interject a few things, ask another question. And I have 4 or 5 questions that you would ask at dinner. And it's better than, oh, honey, how was your day? Which is met with a teenager would say what?
Fine.
Good. Exactly. So those are the answers that you get. It makes for a much more interesting dinner.
Absolutely. It beats the, although I like it when Matthew asks me, dad, high, low, high, but 7 days a week, it gets harder. So having some of those planned conversations is helpful. From an age perspective, the goal is there a best age for it? Ultimately, are they mostly teenagers to young adults?
All the studies are showing that kids are really able to grasp this stuff starting at 7. I think it's probably a little earlier. It's probably 6. The parents who live in our area, they may try at 2 or 3. I think that's probably overkill.
If we make it a competition.
Yeah, if we make it a competition and they learn, they'll have a CFP by the time they're a junior in high school. So no, don't do that. It's usually age 6 to 21. Now, don't freak out if your kids are 10 that you feel like you're behind. Also, don't freak out if your kids are 22. Start freaking out if they're 26, but I think everything between 6 and 26 is a good age range.
And it's setting a foundation for those conversations so that they can continue forever. I laugh. I think I've told you this before. That common question, the question I get from the client is, Mike, how do I talk to my kids about money? And the kid's 55. Well, how have you spoken to them about money? How have you treated money as a family during your lifetime? And then often with parents or with younger adults or younger adults over to very old adults, we talk about family meetings and giving them the overview. And I think having that foundation built at those younger ages is just going to be helpful for that overall understanding about money, how it works, but also other things, taxes, insurance.
Let me give you even a better reason to talk about it. We all hope as parents that when our kids are going through the real life questions, and in high school, that might be drugs, alcohol, sex, you are hoping as a parent that they come to you. And I'm telling you, they need to feel comfortable coming to you. Think about it like this. Your kids, when they're teenagers, they think you're incapable of having a grown-up conversation. They don't think they're the problem. They think you're the problem. And so what it allows you to do when you're bringing up adult conversations like money, it's demonstrating to them that A, you trust them, and B, you're capable of having an adult conversation with them. So if you've set the groundwork for having adult conversations when the tough ones come about, and they will come about, you could just take those three and you can guarantee one of the three of them are going to pop up at some point. You just want to make sure that they feel comfortable talking to you about adult things.
And this one, we've given you a structure so that you can facilitate, so you can build that relationship with your children, have that harder conversation so that they've had experience having those conversations with you so they keep coming back to you. I like that.
And those, you were joking before about the 50-year-old, the communication style.
I just happen to be in that age range.
Well, think about that. The communication style starts when they're in your house, when they're under your roof. And they tend not to get better when they leave. Okay, so if you've got it down, yes, they might not think of you as, look, if your name is mom or dad, you might as well be, I don't want to say an idiot, but they kind of feel it like that. And all of a sudden they get to be 30, they realize you weren't as dumb.
Or you got smarter.
But I think the communication is still there. And I think once you've opened up that framework for, yep, we can talk about money in the house, that's okay. Then that means we could talk about drinking, we could talk about sex, we could talk about drugs. You name it, we can talk about it because we're part of the family and that's what we do.
This is interesting. So we've hit the conversation about how we can A, help our children learn about money, how we can give them some of our values, teach them that it doesn't grow on trees, help them learn about the value of money, which can build a foundation for further conversations and just a strong, healthy relationship with your children going forward. But the book, what you also hit on a minute ago, which we haven't talked about, is the cause marketing of how this helps you as a professional as well. A, showing them your expertise in this topic, which isn't what you do. It's supplemental to who you are as a professional.
I think you're right about that. I think it demonstrates, or I try to demonstrate, this is who I am and this is what I care about. And I care about it because I'm a parent. Someone asked me, like, what makes you the expert here? Well, I coached high school varsity soccer here in Westport for 11 years. So I've got that. I know how to talk to the 15 to 18 year old species. I had my own kids who one is in college now, one is still in high school, and I've had their friends over. And we actually, I have to admit, this sounds a little dorky, but I practiced in front of some of my daughter's friends where they would come over for dinner and I'd say, hey, can I just try this out on you, this conversation? They all enjoy it. Okay. And they all say, oh, wow, Mr. Henske, we talked about money. And then those parents have called me or seen me on the soccer sideline or whatever and said, that is so awesome that you talked about that at dinner. My daughter is so into it now. So it's basically demonstrating who I am and what I stand for as a human being. And I think once people understand who you are as a human being, then they want to learn more about what you do professionally because they want to be around that. And I know I want to be around people like that. I think that I track people who think like that. And the insurance winds up just being an oh, by the way. The good news is that the majority of people are a little bit of a train wreck as it pertains to their life insurance. So it's great that I've got the market, I've got the need, and I've got the demonstration of this is who I am as a human, and this is what you're going to get if you work with me over the next 20 to 30 years.
Can we pivot a little? So connected to the Total Sense work, you've been given, received, you have an opportunity to work with UVA and one team in particular, the basketball team.
Yeah, that's right.
So what exactly are you doing with them? Talk a little bit about either how that opportunity started or what you're doing with them.
Well, it leads into what we were talking about before, where when you're doing good work and it's selfless work, sometimes people find you. I've got this wild phone call from the University of Virginia, and there's this thing called NIL, which stands for name, image, and likeness. And this is basically now college athletes can get paid for their name, their image, and likeness. So that could be an episode in and of itself. So just I'll leave it at that. And all your listeners can just Google if you need to learn more. Anyway, they're putting money in the hands of college students.
Cash money, real money.
Oh, real. Not just paying for their education. They're paying for their education, their apartment, their food, and then giving them money on top of that. So the University of Virginia men's basketball program, this coaching staff is second to none. These are just some of the best human beings I've ever met. And so their coaches said, we need to do something about this. We don't want our kids to get the money and then blow it on cars, jewelry, stuff. So they said, get somebody in here to teach these kids about money. So lo and behold, I get this phone call and I go down. They must have interviewed seven other financial advisors. And then they said to me at the end, they said, yeah, we're sensing like you don't want the job. And I laughed. I go, well, no, I wouldn't quite say that, but I don't want this to be a check the box. And they go, what do you mean? I go, well, I'd want it to be epic. And they laugh. They go, what does epic mean? I said, a legit class, not just a one-time class. Every month we meet, mandatory attendance by all 15 players and office hours, just like a professor would have. And we're going to keep in communication with the kids in between the 4 weeks. And I'm really going to nail it home so that when they leave here, they have a good foundation for money. And so they told me later on that one of the things they liked about me is that they felt like I wasn't a fan. And now I went to UVA in full disclosure, but it wasn't the motivating force. And so now I'm working with men's basketball with a coaching staff that I respect tremendously because they definitely care about these kids beyond basketball. And working with the student athletes has been a blast. So I have interaction with the student athletes, their parents. I get to go to games, which is fun. And they have so much gratitude for it that all of a sudden it's my aha moment. Like I discovered fire. I'm like, oh, wow, these kids really want to learn about this too. And so now it's opening up all these other opportunities that I didn't foresee happening, but they're happening.
Because I'll speak for myself. I don't think I've done a great job of communicating money to my kids. So I could imagine these students are coming into school. They're coming into a lot of money, real cash that they've never had someone to rely upon to have those conversations before. You hit them for, so they get that first check. They have to realize that that's not all their money. Some of that's the government's money.
They get 1099.
So they do get the full check.
They do get the full check, which is problematic. Now, our guys know, make sure you're taking out X amount of dollars every month, putting it on the side so that when you need to pay your taxes in April, we're ready to go.
What are taxes?
What are taxes? What are estimated taxes? By the way, where does tax money go? Why do they have to pay it? What's Social Security and FICA tax and what's Medicare tax? Up to how much? It's very interesting. And the questions that they'll ask are unbelievable. We have so much fun in our class. After my first class, I said, ask me a question on anything. And they said, how about buying versus leasing a car? Another question that somebody asked, what do you think about investing in real estate? And we had a whole conversation about depreciation. And then another kid asked, is there any benefit to having bank accounts at multiple banks? And we had a whole conversation about FDIC insurance. So these are smart kids and they know what questions to ask. And if you just make them curious, they leave there, they know where to get more information.
And while we were talking pre-recording a little bit about a recent conversation of the, please don't trust anybody. So they're asking you those questions because they've heard it from somebody. They either heard it from a family member, a trusted relative, another player, or a student, and then they don't know what to do with that information.
We had two fun conversations that your listeners will like. One was on the don't trust anybody thing, and I say that tongue in cheek. The other one was real rich versus fake rich. Okay. And we make fun of a rival university. I won't say which one it is. I don't want to offend anyone. Say, yeah, you know, your friends down over there, what they're going to do is get all their money and they're going to buy a car and get the bling and they're going to have nothing to show for it. That's what you call fake rich. Real rich is our team. And what we're going to do is we're going to fake poverty. Okay. And what you're going to do is you're going to make all this money and then you're going to sock it away. And I taught them about compound interest and the rule of 72 and all the things that go along with that. And we had so much fun talking about it that I think at the end, they realized it's way cooler to have the money and not flash it than it is to have the money, flash it, and then have nothing to show for it later on. So the real rich versus fake rich was a fun conversation.
It hit home. That's great. Where does that go from here? What's the next step?
There's two things. So I've got my insurance business is doing great. And I just work with other advisors, accountants, attorneys, estate planning attorneys, mostly financial advisors, accountants. That's my peeps. And they basically have their clients work with me on structuring their life insurance portfolios. That's not going to change. That's great. Easy stuff to do.
That's boring.
I actually love doing it. Maybe I'm dorking it
it's
out.
Okay. But I'm a tax lawyer.
You know, when you're calling me boring, you're the tax lawyer. Things are bad. But my vision is A, on the college university front, at least starting with college athletics, because that I know, having played soccer in college, I get how to work with those people. I think it will expand to something bigger, but I think there's a need right now for that. My other tools that I'm developing are for other financial advisors around the country. There are 250,000 financial advisors in the United States, and my goal is to make that species, the financial advisor species, responsible for educating parents on how to talk to kids about money. And if we just did that and accomplished nothing else, wow, we've totally 180'd the direction we've been heading for years, which is nowhere.
And epic. You'll hit epic. At least you're steady on the insurance and who you are and what you love. But these other two areas, clearly, I hate to tell you, but you clearly love the other two areas as well. And I think that's great, combining the total sense, the financial, the teaching the athletes on the university setting about money and getting that fundamentals, and then also expanding to help financial advisors do the same thing.
Well, think about who financial advisors are prospecting for. They want wealthier people who care about this subject, and they're looking for excuses to get in front of these clients on a non-product basis. So many people tell me, oh, my person only calls me when they want to sell me something. So here, financial advisors are getting in front of their clients and making themselves more referable because they're going to be talked about in social settings with their clients on, oh, my person is the one who's helping me teach the kids about money. And then that person is going to say, can you give me their number? Because their person isn't doing it. I think it's going to be the baseline standard for financial advisors in 5 years. If you don't offer that, it's like not having a website today. You don't even exist.
That's pretty good. So we've hit a little bit about your story and building and exiting. And what I do love about that is that you exited a business and you are now living that next step in the new business. And that's surrounded by both the insurance side of it, but also the education side of it. And I think that's great. On the insurance side of it, can you give me a couple of things of what's going on in the life insurance industry right now as we look into the current state in 2024 and the next couple of years?
Well, it's funny. My wife makes fun of me. She says that I enjoy the burn, baby, burn when things are not going well, because that means people need me. And I said, I wouldn't go that far. But what happened was in the early 80s, people were buying these insurance products and they were doing the set it and forget it. And now remember, back in the 80s, it was double digit interest rates. So people went out, they bought all these policies. They thought, oh, I'm only going to have to put money in this for 3 or 4 years and it's going to sustain forever. And no one looked at it after that. So basically, my whole existence now is looking at old life insurance policies that people haven't touched in years and basically opining on what's the future going to look like for this. So that's where I think it's been super interesting, the fact that interest rates were down so low and products are in danger of failing, that it's making me super relevant right now because I just have this little niche in how to audit. By the way, as you know, with trusts, who's liable if the policy goes bad inside the trust? It's the trustee. And a trustee could get sued. And if a trustee gets sued and it's shown that they never once did an audit of the insurance policy, you guys talk about facts and circumstances all the time. I'm thinking that's not a good set of facts and circumstances for that trustee. So it's super easy to review these policies. And I basically have been making a living on reviewing the policies, making my name with these advisors so that when new opportunities pop up, that's what's happening.
And in reviewing them, and I think it's important, you review them, you analyze them. If they've been relying upon a loan within the policy, there's probably a higher chance with the rising rates that that's not a great plan right now. But sometimes the policies are fine. You don't always need to fix them.
Most of them, you'd be surprised, more than 85% of them, I can fix within the existing policy. You have to be very cautious about changing a policy, especially a policy that you bought 10 or 15 years ago, which, by the way, you were 10 years younger and you were 10 years healthier then. It doesn't always make sense. But what I found is I could fix most of them. And then people are saying, oh God, I should have done more of this. And then that's where there's the opportunity for me.
So from a fixing them, is that generally, how do you fix it? You inject cash into a current policy?
It could be injecting more cash. It could be with variable products, changing the structure within how mortality charges are being taken out, or maybe even just reducing the death benefit, which then lowers the mortality costs, which then makes the cash that's in there sufficient to carry it forward.
So the fixing, it depends on what the client wants.
It depends. Do they want to disinherit their kids or do they want to give them as much as they can? Most of the people want to give, well, it's not the kids, it's probably the grandkids.
And depending how old the policy is, if the policy is 20 or 30 years old, the estate tax exemption was a whole lot lower. And that same person may not have a tax problem.
Right.
So it might not be for liquidity.
What happens at the end of this 2025? Yeah. I mean, I think if this applicable exclusion goes down, I might be really busy because people might be wanting to add to their net worth by just purchasing more life insurance.
I think life insurance will come into play for that group of people. We're still not sure exactly what that number is, who don't have an estate tax today. So under $13.5 million or $26, $27 million has a married couple who will have an estate tax in 2026 if the exemption drops, but aren't in a spot where they want to give away a massive amount of their own wealth. They're going to have to go back to life insurance there to either help either to prepay it or to create the liquidity for the life insurance. Should be an interesting couple of years for you.
I hope you're right.
So we'll go ahead in our show notes and I'll add your websites. I'll add some links to your podcast. What are your podcast names?
I've got three going right now, one of which is just for giggles, which is UVA, Where Are They Now? Wouldn't it be of interest to anyone who's listening to this unless you went to UVA?
Yahoo listens.
They're funny. It's more, I feel like those start with like all the stupid things they did their first and second year and how they turned out okay despite those first 2 years. The Affluent Insurance Advisor is one that I do. That's meant for mostly for other advisors. That's not meant for the general public. And then the last one, The Total Sense, that's the one I do at the library where probably a lot of your listeners would want to chime in. We have some good ones. I know it's my own miserable self-interest saying that they're good, but I think they're interesting. And nonetheless, they make you think and they're short.
And you're working on a masterclass.
I am.
Or is that not public?
Almost done. No, it's okay. Yeah, I'm working on a masterclass for my 12 chapters. So I'm really excited about that.
So I won't have to read them. I can just watch you.
It could be that. And they're basically going to be distributed through 9,000 libraries nationwide. So that's my drop Jerry Maguire moment where giving back to the industry, giving back to the world. And if it could be public with 9,000 libraries, that's awesome. Free content. It's great.
Great reach. So we'll share that information in our notes. So if people want to reach out to you or find any of these resources, they'll be able to grab it. But thanks a lot for joining me today.
Awesome. It was a blast. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Future Focused, Sophisticated Estate Planning, hosted by Aaron Nichols and Michael Clear, partners of the Private Client Services Department at Wiggin and Dana. At Wiggin and Dana, our aim is preserving the wealth that a family has worked so hard to create and pride ourselves in offering value-driven solutions and results. Subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast platform, share episodes with your clients, and follow our highly talented, creative, and experienced lawyers on LinkedIn for even more great insight. We'll see you next time on Future Focused, Sophisticated Estate Planning.